The first legal authority that we had in this country on religion and the free exercise of religion was, of course, in the First Amendment. And there had been a few cases on that where, for example, an employee challenged an unemployment award, a rejection based on he had exercised his First Amendment rights. Well, he couldn't, and this is all the cases are in the paper. He couldn't sue his private employer under the First Amendment, but the Unemployment Commission's decision actually was state action. So he was actually able to go after that. That was very early on. But in 1963, the year of my birth, the United States, but before Title VII, the United States Supreme Court did its first case where it was establishing this strict scrutiny and compelling state interest standard for governments, and turned around and granted unemployment to an employee who was fired by a private company because he would not work on his Saturday Sabbath. So the company fired him for that. He got unemployment because the unemployment award was a state action, and it went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, which probably costs a little more than the amount of the unemployment, but there may have been others backing him. We then jump just for some background to 1990, and the U.S. Supreme Court denied unemployment for employees who were using peyote for religious purposes, because at the time it was not unlawful, and not because it was a compelling state interest. So at that time, if something is part of religious practice but is against the law to do, and against criminal law, then you don't have to show compelling government interest to be able to restrict that practice. All right, and that was in 90. So that peyote case, we're calling it, got people all upset. They said, that's not right. In certain religious practices, peyote is an important practice. It's a religious compelling belief, and there shouldn't be government action taken against people who use peyote in religious services. So that public reaction was pretty strong, and it gave pressure on Congress to pass RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which I kind of think of as a newer law than 1993. I guess anything that happened after I started practicing law feels new, but I feel like it had been around less time than that. But I think really it's just being used a lot more now, and we're hearing about it now, especially with the Obamacare birth control type issues, which we'll talk about. But RFRA wrote into the law that there must be a compelling government interest to make something illegal, and that any law that is not for a compelling government interest that burdens religious practices must be more narrowly tailored and to avoid burdening religious practices as much as possible. So that was in 93. And then in 1993, the same year, the Supreme Court looked at an ordinance by a Florida city that banned animal sacrifice. And they said, we're going to invalidate that animal sacrifice city ordinance because there was not a neutral application to all, but it was for the purpose of constraining religious practice. So that's just sort of that quick history of First Amendment and RFRA. We'll get into more detail in a minute. Now, Title VII, as you all should be very familiar with, requires the reasonable accommodation of religion, not just stopping discrimination against it. That is interesting that in the 1964 Civil Rights Act, there was no requirement to accommodate religion. It was simply a no discrimination clause. If you had a Jewish last name or an Irish last name, or you know, a Catholic last name or a Muslim last name, you couldn't be discriminated for that reason and you couldn't be fired for it. So in 67, which is the same time that they put in the Age Discrimination Act, they included an affirmative duty to accommodate, and they had an undue hardship standard. Now, we all know that undue hardship, and by the way, that was in the regs. Congress didn't pass that specifically until 92, but that was the guidance for the EEOC to enforce religious discrimination.